Welcome to Getting Goosebumps, the power of storytelling, the weekly podcast helping you to craft stories that inspire, entertain, and convince. Each week, listen to leading industry experts, from top marketers and CEOs to producers and writers from the entertainment industry. Learn how to elevate your brand message and spur your audience into action. Hello and welcome to another show. I'm your host, Brian Adams, and this week I had the pleasure of speaking to Patricia Fripp. Patricia is an executive speech coach and a dynamic Hall of Fame keynote speaker. Patricia is the expert of conveying the main message of a brand, captivating an audience, and making a story memorable, and of even adding razor-sharp specificity, which is easy for me to say. So in this week's interview, we cover storytelling and Patricia's very own effective structure for tackling story. She explains the big idea, why every story needs a big idea and how to use it to engage your audience. And finally, entertaining the audience. Patricia takes us through the balance of information and entertainment, giving us some top tips for you to use. So whether it's public speaking, writing, or video creation, there's plenty of actionable tips to take away from this episode. So sit back and enjoy. And don't forget, let me know what you think too. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of our podcast. Today, I'm really excited to be talking to Patricia Fripp. Hello, Patricia. How the devil are you today?
I'm so damn good, you'd find it difficult to believe.
What a great answer. That's probably the best answer I've ever had to that question. Now, Patricia, I've been really looking forward to talking to you because you're a fantastic personality. You've been recommended by the wonderful Michael Haig, who's been on our show. And I'm intrigued. You've been described as an electrifying speaker. Obviously, you're a great communicator, even a rock star speaker. You're in the Hall of Fame for keynote speaking, so I really want to dig into that. But rather than me recite your sort of CV, can you start by giving us your background in your own words? Tell us how you got to this point right now.
Well, thank you. And I was born in a small town in England and came to America at 20. Now, I'd become a hairstylist at 15, served a 3-year apprenticeship. And so I arrived in America at 20 with no job, nowhere to live, didn't know anyone. And at that point, we didn't meet that many people who'd actually been to America. So I knew America really from movies. And I knew everyone in America was rich and the streets were paved with movie stars. And I have not been in the slightest bit disappointed. Anyway, so right up front, I knew I was rubbing, not exactly rubbing shoulders, but I was working in a hotel owned by a movie star. And we had celebrities come in the salon. And because I was working in a hotel where there were conventions and people on vacation, it was possible to make a good living without developing a clientele because people were in the hotel. And from there, at age 23, I went to work in a salon, which was for men's hairstyling when it was a new industry. That was taken over by the Hollywood hairstylist Jay Sebring. At our opening party, Paul Newman, Joanne Woodward, and Warren Beatty came to our opening party.
Wait. Did you meet Paul Newman?
Yes. This hand that I am holding out towards that you can't see actually shook hands with Paul Newman.
Ugh, that is absolutely incredible. My absolute idol, Paul Newman.
Fantastic. Well, what is amazing, he walked in, he had a can of beer in one hand, and he was very elegantly but nicely casually dressed, not in flashy colours, and he was surrounded by people. However, he glowed. You know when you look at movies, and all I can explain is that was what they must mean by a magnetic personality.
Wow. Superb. Fantastic.
Anyway, when at age 30, when I went into business myself, I was traveling nationwide for a hair product company, giving seminars to hairstylists, and I'd been very successful. So I would also give a second day of management and motivation and how do you sell products and how do you run your business. And all my clients in the financial district were movers and shakers and said, hey, come speak at my Rotary Club. Come speak to my Kiwanis Club, my Breakfast Club. Hey, can you speak at my staff meeting? And so I let all my clients know, and having been to Dale Carnegie and Toastmasters, I went to lots of seminars. So I had an idea on how to put together speeches. And then, and this is a real turning point, so I was speaking to promote my business and loving it. And I went to see one of my heroes speak. And he talked to me after and said, Patricia, you must go to the National Speakers Association convention. And I'm a great believer that if someone you admire and wish to emulate gives you advice, you don't ask how much does it cost, you do it. So I turned up at my first National Speakers Association convention thinking no one's going to want to talk to me. I only talk to Rotary Clubs and hairdressers. And really two occurrences happened. One, I saw the vision of what was possible to be my next career.
Okay.
Now, understand at that point, I had started work at 15. I had a 10-year lease at age 30. I was now 32. So I had 8 more years on my lease. And I love my business. I was not ready to retire even if I could. But building a speaking business is a long-term goal. And I was smart enough to know that. And secondly, I got discovered by a big-time promoter who booked me to speak to 2,000 people on the same program with Dr. Robert Shuler, the minister from Garden Grove.
Wow.
Who was a big speaker at the time. So I got a lucky break and I saw a vision, and then I actually retired from hairstyling a year ahead of schedule when I became the first woman president of the National Speakers Association. So in the early part of my career, I was a keynote speaker, and it was a time when women were new in speaking, and the world, the speaking world, was really developing. And I did quite well because there weren't very many women. And then what happened after being a keynote speaker for very successful, as you might have noticed, what happens is your clients will tell you where to take your career.
Okay.
And I had a national sales manager come up to me and said, Patricia, I liked your speech, but I loved how you delivered it. Can you teach our salespeople to speak that way? Because it takes us a year to be in a position to give an hour presentation to a hospital board. They sold the food service in hospitals. It's worth $9 million a year if we get the business, and we are losing sales. It has nothing to do with our offering or our price. It has to do with the fact that the presentation skills of our competitors are better than ours.
Oh, okay.
And that, little did I know that she would open up a whole new world, because it doesn't matter what the economy does, people will always invest in their salespeople, because that drives business.
Wow, well, it's certainly a hell of a journey via Paul Newman, which is most impressive, I've got to say. So you make it sound like public speaking came easy to you, Patricia.
Well, I wouldn't say that. Now, for some people, Brian, it is more natural to get up and be comfortable standing up in front of strangers speaking. However, it's still a practice developed skill. So my personality was suited. You know, I have been good really, well, probably at three different areas. One, as a hairstylist. Two, as a speaker. And now actually as a coach and trainer. But what made me a good hairstylist and a good speaker? Very much the same ingredients. One, I had a personality that was suited to both. Now, that doesn't mean you can't be a great speaker. You can't be a great hairstylist as an introvert, but it's going to be more difficult because you have to, you know, you have to engage with people in both ventures.
Yeah.
And then I had good teachers and mentors, or I sought out training. And three, with both, I practice more than anybody else. Because, okay. You see, even if you have talent, you need to learn the principles and the disciplines behind what it is. You know, you might have great stories, but you need to know how to structure a presentation, how to adapt it to this audience, how to make people feel you are talking just to them, even though there are 800 people in the room. You learn this. This is not necessarily second nature.
And that structure you talk about, Patricia, that's what I really want to get into. And I'm interested, does that structure translate whether you stood on stage or whether you're writing something or planning something? You know, are we talking about a structure for good old universal communication here, or is this specifically for speaking?
Well, I would say, although this is designed for speaking, it's absolutely the same in important sales conversations, running a staff meeting, or certainly writing.
Right.
So, for example, there are five ways that you can improve your presentation. And one most certainly is the structure. And if you think of it this way, and the question I ask my coaching clients is, if you had one sentence rather than 20 minutes or 30 minutes or 45 minutes or 2 hours, one sentence, what would you say? Because you have to focus in what is your premise, your big idea, your dominant theme. You know, what is the big idea?
Yeah, and that's harder than it sounds as well, isn't it, Patricia?
It is, because I say, well, what are you going to talk about? And people give me a paragraph. I said, no, give me a sentence. No, that's a long sentence. But, you know, so, and I have a certain formula, because many speakers, we might talk on the same subject. However, what is different about our subject is the audience and how our message relates to the audience. And I have a premise formula, and if anyone is listening, don't do this if you're driving, but and write notes down the page. So every dot, 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 which means you're going to fill in the blank. So this won't make sense until you fill it in. Every can, subject of your talk, / result, underneath how, question mark, 1, 2, 3, 4.
1, 2, 3. Oh, this, I've got... You've got me here, Patricia. I'm intrigued.
Okay. So let us just say the premise of could be this conversation, this podcast. So the premise is every ambitious professional can prepare and present themselves more effectively. Now, anyone listening might think, oh, good, I want to do that. How do I do that? 1, 2, 3, 4. Now, the 1, 2, 3, 4 is your talking points, or what I call your points of wisdom. So one, any message, however you're going to communicate to 1, 5, 50, 500, or in writing, or in a webinar, or in a podcast, you first of all have to make sure your message is of interest to your audience.
Of course, absolutely, yeah, being relevant.
So you need what I would call an emotional connection. Now you're going to intellectually and emotionally connect. And you emotionally connect three ways: through eye contact, which we don't have here, you focus language, and stories. But so you have to have an emotional connection. Then you need to have a simple structure, which is what we're discussing at this point. You need to open with impact and close with a high, because the first 30 seconds and the last 30 seconds have the most impact. And most professionals aren't bad once they get going talking about what they are experts on. Very few I have met in decades of helping people know how to successfully open with impact and close on a high. then you're going to make sure that your stories and examples are memorable, that people can see what they hear you say. And then five, you have to add razor sharp specificity. So you might say, these are the ways that I prove my premise. These would be the talking points. This is how you do it. So you see now who is the audience? Now, I would say, listening to you, you have ambitious professionals. These are the, whether they're in sales, whether they're in leadership, whether they're consultants, no matter what profession, if you're going to listen to your podcast, the chances are they're ambitious professionals.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's
so I know that's quite general, but that is as general as we know with a podcast. Now, I might say, if I'm talking to an audience, which, so for example, on Wednesday, I'm talking to an audience who work with a bank. And I might say, every relationship manager, so I'd use the name of the bank, every relationship manager at this bank can develop even more business. Now, you say even more because you assume that people are doing fairly well.
Yeah.
You know, you have to acknowledge you're not doing, it's not that you're doing what you're doing badly. We are here to look at ways you can make it even better. I maintain people do not want to be said, you're doing everything wrong, go listen to this woman, she's going to fix you. That is not the way to build rapport. So I always tell my clients, tell them my program is a reward. Because you're doing a good job, we brought in this woman who can perhaps help you do it even better, which means you're going to make even more commissions or you're going to get promoted or whatever it is that they want.
Fantastic. And that must feel good for you as well, Patricia, being a reward constantly for teams of people.
Well, I certainly hope they think so, yes. Now, let's go back to our structure. And I'm going to use an example from is a long-time client.
Okay.
The American Payroll Association, I've been speaking at their conferences and training all their leaders for 20 years. And every year I deliver one presentation called Selling Yourself and Your Ideas to Your Senior Management. After my opening remarks, I would say every payroll manager can sell themselves and their ideas to their senior management. And of course, they would think, oh, I want to do that. How do I do it? 1, 2, 3, 4. I give them my talking points. But I could also say, remember, I could sell the result, not the topic. So I could say every payroll manager has the power to get promoted. Oh, how do I get promoted? You have to learn to sell yourself and your ideas to your senior management. Oh, how do I do that?
Okay, great, cool.
So you see, sometimes, now this is very important if you have a soft subject.
So do you think, Patricia, one of the issues with poor communication is not cutting through that and not being solution focused, would you say?
When it comes to poor communication, there are probably hundreds of different reasons. And the main reason is, one, either people are not sold on the value, and because so many people email and text, they are out of the habit of speaking. But you always need to know, in whatever circumstance, what is the big picture you're trying to sell? How do you prove it? How do you make it then of interest to this audience? And be very clear what it is specifically you are asking this audience to do with this information.
Yeah, I guess because I was going to ask you about stories. You mentioned eye contact, focused language and stories. Even some great storytellers, whether it's written, whether it's video or presenting in person, sometimes the story can be very impactful. It could be memorable. But a lot of people have trouble attaching the call to action. And obviously, you know, a good story is all very well and good. But if it doesn't do its job, then actually it's not helping you. How do you How do you go about structuring a good story, Patricia, to make sure that there is that focused call to action, so it becomes functional, not just a nice story?
Well, there are stories that you entertain your friends with in the pub. You know, but we're talking, of course, about stories can inspire, stories can teach, and good stories can convince. So you need to make sure that your story illustrates your point, and your story can explain complex issues in a very simple way. And let me give you a specific example. I was helping an executive with a very important speech, and we were doing marvelously well. And he gets to the point, he was talking about corporate citizenship, mm-hmm. which was obviously a subject he was very passionate about. And there'd just been a tsunami, and the salespeople had donated $360,000, and the company had matched it. And at this point in his speech, unfortunately, I thought his speech was getting a bit dull, yet he was obviously passionate about this. And what I have often done when I've been speaking to speakers, I tell them, I say, well, you know, you got one of the most brilliant people in your mind. He's a president of a $2 billion software company. How would you tell him his speech is boring? You know, I say, how would you do it? So, you know, and I get all these different answers. And I said, well, they're not bad answers. But frankly, I was not about to tell him his speech was boring. So what I did was say, and this is another power of communication, is the quality of your questions.
Absolutely. What did you ask him?
I said, Bernard, how would you explain corporate citizenship to your children?
Oh, that's a good question.
Of course it is. And the answer was even better. He said, Patricia, it was the day after Christmas, and I sat both my children down and said, you are very lucky children because you have generous parents and you have even more generous grandparents. And perhaps you would like to give us one of your gift certificates or one of your presents, and we'll take the money and give to the children who no longer have homes. And he said, I was so proud of my 14-year-old son. He came to me the next day and said, Papa, how much do I give? Because I could give you all of my savings and all of my pocket money and all of my Christmas presents. And it still wouldn't be enough to make a difference.
Oh, wow.
How much do I give? And Bernard said, I told him, oh, you never give it all. You just give enough that it hurts a little. Stories can explain the complex. Stories can take a lofty idea like corporate citizenship and make it real. But what makes it real is you have characters and you have dialogue. And this is the secret of moving your speech forward and making your story really come alive. You have to deliver what the characters say. You don't report on the dialogue. Because when you deliver in dialogue, you cannot, it's not humanly possible to deliver it and not put at least some passion or poignancy in, because you know this 14-year-old boy is really thinking about this and wondering. This is a young man who will grow up to be a philanthropist because he's seriously thinking about giving all his savings away.
Mm. But what a fantastic question that you put to that CEO, and he went from a boring story, skipped over just the reporting bit, and went straight into, you know, a really good story like that. I mean, how else do you coax out stories from people like that, anyone that you're working with, Patricia? Because a lot of people find it difficult, don't they? But I guess what you've just illustrated is if you ask great questions, then everybody's got a good story in them, haven't they? Especially if you're passionate about the subject.
So my approach is, what I do, I find out what they want to talk about. I mean, I need to know an essence of their speech. I ask them questions in the order that this speech is going to be delivered, at least as a good starting point. If you want to inspire action and commitment, your audience has to see the person behind the position. And this is why you tell the personal stories.
Fantastic. So what other techniques would you recommend if somebody sat there and they've got to write some content or they've got to do this on their own and a story doesn't come to mind? Can you still be authentic and create a story or an anecdote or something that illustrates?
A story has to be based on truth. So let's look, for example, how people would tell stories in everyday business life. We all have to sell our services. And so we all have to give stories of satisfied clients. And again, we have a formula. You still want characters and you still want dialogue, but you follow the situation, solution, success. Now, this has to be based on reality. Now, some of my clients are in some industries that you cannot actually mention your clients. But what you can do, if you're talking about an executive at a technology company in San Jose, what you could do is take the same essence and say, well, Mary was an executive at a manufacturing company in Cleveland. So you don't recognize the client, but the situation, the problem, and what you did for them is true. Cannot make up, oh, this client had the problem and I solved it and they think I'm a hero, if you really didn't do it.
No. I guess I mean, if you've got facts and you're trying to illustrate them. I've read quite a bit of, Ken Blanchard's books. He's just the 1 Minute Manager and Gung Ho and so forth. And he comes up with stories which perfectly illustrate his philosophies and his advice. That's a skill, isn't it? That's tough to do. Have you ever taken facts like that and come up with a story to make a point from that regard?
Well, it depends, because a lot of Ken's books are fables. Mm-hmm. So, of course, they are stories around the facts. But every story is based in truth that really resonates.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess so. I mean, that's one of the secrets to really connecting to the audience emotionally, right?
Because what your stories are about flesh and blood characters that the audience can relate to. If you're creating a presentation, don't start with a PowerPoint. That's the biggest mistake you can make. PowerPoint is tidy. The creative process is messy. So I would say whether you're going to write an article, whether you're going to write an important sales letter, whether you're going to put together any type of presentation, is start with a yellow pad or a flip chart or a whiteboard and brainstorm what is going in here. You know, and because you get creative ideas, it's not logical. It's not in a logical order. And then once you've got what's going in it or what examples you're going to use, you think, all right, what is my premise? Now, what did I just say? A speech structure has to prove your premise by focusing on not the history of your company, not your latest widgets. You focus on, these are your challenges, or here are your opportunities, or this is what you're most interested in. And you tell your story while you are letting them know how you would solve their problems. That's when you use your stories and examples of other clients, satisfied clients who've had the same problem they do.
And one thing that you just touched on there, was framing what you can do in the context of maybe your competitors or the current situation that a prospect might be in. I guess just to sort of contrast the value that you're bringing with the problem that you might be currently experiencing. How important is framing what you're offering against something else, just to give sort of a visual context, if you like. Is that a technique that you use?
Yeah, you're never going to knock your competition. You just have to make your offering more appealing.
Mm-hmm. And look for that point of difference. I mean, I guess certainly in a sales scenario, it does help to know who your competition are, so you can frame what you do in a way that when the prospect is summing up who should they go with, they're looking at the benefits, then surely that gives you a slight advantage. Do you ever use techniques, or would you use sort of persuasion from that point of view, Patricia, if you do know who your competition
is? All conversations need to be persuasive. And it would be helpful if you know what your competition is offering. And often when I work with companies, I'll ask them, do you always come up against the same companies? Because in some industries, there might be three major competitors and half a dozen small competitors. And I have seen this done very successfully at a couple of sales meetings where I was speaking at. Different salespeople would have the job to research their major competitors and give presentations on this is how this company sells against us.
Moving away from sales there, what techniques can we pull back into our marketing there? And I'd be interested, Patricia, you've been such a prolific speaker. I'd be interested to hear, do you have any favourite stories in your back pocket that you always like to deliver? Whether it's, you know, just a short, sharp story or something that really delivers a point that you like to make time and time again.
Well, how about the Bernard story? Because that takes less than a minute to tell and it has so many of the ingredients.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that did put everything you were saying into perspective really nicely and concisely as well. Do you think that's important? Because there's a tendency, I guess, or a danger when we talk about stories and storytelling to think that they are long, elaborate, sort of lengthy things. But a good story, if it can be told in, you know, 30 seconds, a minute or less, it can be incredibly powerful, can't it? You know, Is that something that you particularly work on? You mentioned earlier on that somebody will give you paragraphs and paragraphs and you'll cut it down. Do you think that's part of the key? Brevity is...
Well, of course, there is a principle in Hollywood, get into the scene late.
Oh, what does that mean?
It means that many people give far too much setup information that you can reveal within the story. And this is why dialogue's so good. So, for example, I picked up the phone and Pat said, Patricia, as you know, we are a $2 billion software company with aspirations of being $20 billion. We are getting ready for our international sales meeting. We have 1,500 salespeople from around the country, and 40% of them were acquired. So we need them to know they are working with the right company at the right time. Their future is bright. The work you've done with our engineers and our management in preparing them is superb. Now we need you to work with our president. He's a nice man and he's not a bad speaker. It's just he's shy, he's an engineer, and this is a company that doesn't have any corporate rock stars. We would like you to write him a speech, make him a rock star, and you got 4 hours. Now, you see, what I did is I knew a lot of that because I had worked with the company. But what I want to do is give the audience as much background as possible, and I do it all in her words.
Okay.
So I take what might have happened in multiple conversations and put it in one. Now, another example would be, and that's the background conversation. Another would be, and this is how I opened a presentation I delivered a couple of days ago. Mm-hmm. The opening line was, I looked into his eyes and said, I know you don't know me. You have to trust me. You're not very experienced, but don't worry, I've been doing this for a long time. We don't have very much time, so you need to do exactly what I tell you. Consider me your new best friend. For the next 4 hours, we were locked in the room. I said, that's good, do it again. That's even better. Try it standing up. He staggered out after 4 hours and said, I'm exhausted. I've been hypnotized and I can't wait to do it again.
That, wonderful.
Then my next line was, the beginning of our story was a request. Patricia, I am the new national sales manager. So you see what I'm doing, I am taking you right to the scene. Then I give you the opening of the story, which was the call. Is last year's sales meeting was a disaster. I'm new in this position. It's not happening on my watch. I need you to do this. And then the biggest challenge is you need to work with our president. He's been here 10 years. Everyone sees him as a team player, but they do not see him as presidential. He's only been president for 5 months, and he's a terrible speaker who hardly speaks. We need you to write him a speech. Make him look presidential, and you got 4 hours. Now, I don't know why they think I can transform all these people in 4 hours, but that seems to be as much time as they give me. Now, very often, like with Bernard's case, the first story, they say, oh, when can I work with you again? Because they take it seriously. So, but for example, You can start with the action is, it was the scariest moment of my life. I was looking over the parking lot, wondering, where's my daughter? So you see, you don't have to say, oh, I have this many children and I was taking my 12-year-old to the mall and this is what we're going to buy there and this is where we parked and this is, no. Get me to the action.
Brilliant. And what you just illustrated there very naturally was creating suspense and
yes,
anticipation, right?
Standing. Yes.
Mm. And anticipation, one of the most powerful emotions and elements of the big screen, like sort of movies, that kind of stuff. Very underused in corporate and marketing communications, wouldn't you say?
Well, it depends on people once they realize the power, and more people are realizing the power, and more people are looking for help with their presentations. They are sometimes unrealistic about how long it takes. However, more are getting interested. I know from the amount of inquiries we get, and I have friends who are also speech coaches and sales trainers, and we're all in demand.
Well, it's certainly, I'm not convinced anybody can learn to be a polished speaker in 4 hours, if it's possible to be frypmatized in 4 hours, which I absolutely love. Then wow, I bet that is a hell of a session. But would you say it's more like a muscle that you need to exercise? And, you know, you mentioned...
This is, and you know, a lot of focus of my work these days and many of my clients, they certainly hire me to work with them in person. However, the way you learn is repetition and reinforcement, which is why we created our FRIP virtual training as a standalone option or follow-up from in-person training. Because here's the dirty little secret from the training industry, and I've made my living training for years. And that is, when you have a great speaker with a good subject and an audience who is genuinely interested in it, mm-hmm. chances are that 2 weeks after the training, they have forgotten 70%. Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean the 30%, you know, that can be very valuable and help them. But the only way you really learn any skill is repetition and reinforcement. Mm-hmm. You know, you didn't go out and take one driving lesson, you can drive. No, no, no. It's repetition and reinforcement. How do you remember? How do you learn a language? How do you learn to perfect your speaking? How do you learn anything? You introduce to the ideas from somebody who knows more than you do. Because we always say with Fripp virtual training, you can learn to speak easily, convenient, and quickly. Now, that does mean you've got to put a little effort into it. I could do my part and spend 18 months of my life creating this magnificent interactive virtual training. But don't just buy it. Actually go in and use it. And we're hearing a lot of great success stories, the repetition and reinforcement.
Well, I can certainly testify to the fact that just buying a gym membership doesn't mean that you automatically get in shape. In 2015, I paid for 12 months gym membership, and I think I went twice. So
make money out of people like you.
Absolutely, Patricia. One other type of public speaker I've got a lot of respect for is stand-up comedians. Now, you'll relate to a lot of their skills, being very relaxed and in control, being very natural, having timing and delivery, being able to react to an audience, all skills that you teach and would hold in high esteem as well, I guess. But how important is humour, and how powerful can it be to sort of break tension or deliver a message with impact?
Superb comedians, really, they are magnificent. And it really is. Everyone can learn to be funnier. There are techniques and principles. But people who are genuinely, genuinely funny and still work at it. Yes. Now, let's take it out of the comedy club. One, I would ask people who want to be funny, are you naturally funny? And, for example, if you do not make your friends laugh at dinner parties or when you're out socially, don't try and be funny because you're not a funny person. And the way you're funny in a business environment or even as a professional speaker, it's not that you force humor into your presentation or conversation. You uncover it. Now, you might exaggerate it slightly. However, it's based on truth, and it has to be appropriate. So many business people think they have to start with a joke. And I tell my clients, no, don't. One, because this joke belongs to the world. I first heard it in Dale Carnegie 40 years ago. Chances are a high percentage of your audience has heard this joke. So one, what you are doing by starting with a joke is you are flavoring your entire presentation that there is nothing new and original in it.
That's a really good way of putting it, I think. And it's a huge risk as well, right? Because, I can think of a number of times I've sat in the audience. I'm sure you're the same, where they open with a joke, it doesn't go down well, and it also destroys your confidence, and everything from there just seems to go downhill, right?
Well, yeah, because, and you're absolutely right, the first 30 seconds is building rapport, engaging the audience is so important that you want to get off to a good start for your own confidence. And if you tell a joke, you don't do it well, nobody laughs, you start your presentation with perspiration running down your back, and the audience is thinking, oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
So you need to start. There are much better ways. And so I would say, start with a question. If I were to ask you, is 2016 the year you double your sales? Perhaps you'd say yes. Perhaps you'd say no. Most likely you'd say, Patricia, I would like it to be. Can you tell me how? Well, congratulations. You're at the right place at the right time. Let's roll up our sleeves and look at six different ways that you can double your income with your existing database.
That was slick. you've done this before, haven't you?
You start with an interesting statistic. For example, I was speaking for 350 Seventh-day Adventist pastors. My subject was how to design and deliver a more charismatic sermon. And I would expect, and this is one area that we always need to ask ourselves, what is our audience probably thinking? And I would expect people would be thinking, even generous audiences, huh, she's the only person on the program who isn't a minister. How is anyone who isn't a minister, how can they tell me how to write a better sermon? I write one every week. I bet she isn't even a Seventh-day Adventist, which I'm not. So you realize in a circumstance like that, to come out with an interesting statistic from their world, not yours, that you know and they don't, and Seventh-day Adventists are more biblical scholars than many. So I walked out and said, 465 times in the Bible, it said it came to pass. It did not say it came to stay. And unless your sermon is well constructed, artfully crafted, and charismatically delivered, it will not come to stay in the hearts, minds, and lives of your congregation. And if you've ever heard 350 Seventh-day Adventist pastors saying, amen, hallelujah, you have never had a speech get off to a good start.
I bet that was a great feeling to get that. To get a good response in the first few seconds is phenomenal as a speaker, I guess, right?
Now, this is the point, Brian. I did not put my foot on the step and think, oh, how am I going to start this presentation? If there are only two areas that actually scripted and memorized and your spouse could elbow you in the middle of the night and you could deliver it, would be the open and the close.
That's good advice.
Because if you can turn people who probably thinking, huh, how can someone from the outside tell us how to write a sermon, within really 30 seconds, have them all screaming and applauding and saying amen, you know what you're talking about.
Absolutely. Patricia, is there a fine line between being very well prepared and rehearsed and then being a little bit too slick, where there's a risk of not coming across authentic? How do you walk that fine line?
Well, one, anyone that uses that an excuse for not prepared is an idiot. Yeah, and obviously, I've heard that before. The idea is, if you are coming off as too slicked or too canned or what you would say is too prepared, because you cannot be too prepared. But what you need to do is you need to know your presentation, or at least the flow of your conversation, so well that you can forget it, and then you can focus on the audience. You see, if you're still thinking, and this is why, if you script out your presentation and it isn't written conversationally, it will be very difficult to remember. If it isn't in a logical structure, it is difficult to remember. So what you need to do is you need to know your starting point, your ending point. You need to be able to hold the overview in your mind so you know where you're going and have the flexibility, depending if it's what type of presentation, is to be able to answer questions or change direction or incorporate something that's happened in the moment.
I call that being bulletproof. I mean, if you know everything about your subject matter and you're confident, then you're walking into it. You're bulletproof because you welcome any question, won't you? You welcome dialogue, and that's where engagement with an audience is very welcome, right? You know, if you're suitably prepared. Yeah, cool. Patricia, you've certainly opened my eyes to, in terms of structure and approach to this type of thing. There's a hell of a lot to it, isn't there? You know, there's a lot to consider here. So even Bernard, that you spent 4 hours with.
Well, you understand with Bernard, he said, and he was, they said 4 hours, but it was getting closer to five. And people were saying they couldn't, because his assistant said he'll only stay with you 2 hours.
That's got to be a good sign.
You know, after 4 and a half, they would come and say, Bernard's still with Patricia. And they had to drag him away. And he said, well, what we did from then, we video conferenced because he lived in Paris. So we continued our coaching and training. And then I went on location because it was one to rehearse your opening. But a lot of your closing remarks, you can't write till you're actually there. You can have a framework. But so I was there working with him. It was he took it seriously. And it was so wonderful to see someone walk out with four slides and be funny and inspiring and just really connect to the audience and to walk around and in the coffee break and hear people say, you know, what happened to Bernard? And I know it was me. He was hypnotized.
I absolutely love that phrase, hypnotized.
Yeah, hypnotized. But anyway, Brian, all your wonderful listeners can also be hypnotized in a very easy, convenient way.
Brilliant. Well, I was just coming to the fact that you mentioned your online site with all of this resource. You've got to tell us a little bit more about that. I always give our guests the final word when doing these interviews. So fire away, Patricia. We're all dying to know, how can we learn a little bit more from you?
The absolute best way, and it's very cost effective, is FRIP virtual training. So FRIPP, like Peter Paul, FRIP, V as in virtual, T as in training.com. And you can take a free trial. You get a chapter on openings, a chapter on stories, and a chapter on sales. And if you like it, then you just join. And not only, there are 12 different courses made up of multiple chapters. It is it's put together in digestible chunks, and because it's very engaging, you can't just listen to it in the background. You actually are engaged. It'll work on your mobile device. So it's designed for busy, ambitious professionals. And FRIP VT, take a trial, join, and we have ongoing FRIP VT user meetings that people, even if they can't tune in, you register, you get the replay. And so that is a great way to ask me questions and be part of our community.
Brilliant. Thanks, Patricia. And there you have it, guys. Visit that link, check out those resources. If it's anything like this conversation, it's going to be fantastic and full of value. So check it out and let us know what you think. But that's just about it for another week. Join me again next week. Patricia, thanks very much for joining me.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks.
So that's it for another week. But before you go, don't forget to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And for a chance to win a copy of our best-selling book, Getting Goosebumps, simply subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. Or tweet us your thoughts using hashtag Getting Goosebumps. Would you like to pick the next guest? Let me know who you'd love to hear on the show by emailing me at brian@ph-creative.com.